Today on the Cooligans, we are talking about the transfer deadline window.
Worked out well for you, right?
Valerin Balogun was so close. He was at the doorstep to join Everton and was like, nah, I can't do this. Failed medical. A lot of drama. We break it all down. An American Everton fan might cry into this microphone.
Valerin Balogun was like, can't hang out with these broke boys. I'm going back to Monaco. Plus, we talk about the U.S. Open Cup is back. I've got some conspiracy theories that maybe U.S. soccer's flexing their muscle, and maybe we'll all get what we want from MLS. Tune in, find out if what I think is right, or tell us if you think what I'm thinking is right. And then that's not all, because we also talk about Champions League. We break down the draws a little bit. I talk a little bit about why I think Arsenal might be the favorites. Plus, where are Christian and I going to go and redo his honeymoon? The only way you can find that out is if you stick around, because we got that and more today on the Cooligans. I had a hot dog named after me, a sausage.
Oh, yeah. I saw.
Is everything in a hot dog bun considered a hot dog? No, right? Like, if you got a beef in tube form and put that in a hot dog bun, you're not having a hot dog. You're having a hot dog shaped burger.
Because you wouldn't call a Philly cheesesteak a hot dog.
Like, yeah, well, I mean, that's not a hot dog. You don't put, if you put a Philly cheesesteak in a hot dog bun, I'm going to go with it. Where's the rest of this? Where's the other three? Because a Philly cheesesteak is supposed to be huge.
Have you heard of the, oh no, you're not on TikTok, so you don't know the Dolores Nicole drama.
I don't even know who that is.
This is just a lady who left a comment on a video of so it was a woman holding a hot dog and a hot dog bun. And she's just basically saying, like, I'm about to eat this hot dog and blah, blah, blah. Just talking about how, like, it's a perfect. Oh, this is what the video specifically was about, a hot dog, the hot dog to hot dog bun ratio. And she was like, this is the perfect hot dog to hot dog bun ratio.
Was it like a much longer?
No, it was just like just slightly out of the hot dog bun. And she was bragging about how this was the perfect hot dog for the hot dog bun. And then a random lady, Dolores Nicole, she commented, being like, is that a brand of hot dog bun? Like, because it looks like that brand of hot dog bun. I don't know. Edwards hot dog buns. Doesn't matter the name. And then the comment section. This is basically the way we have Black Twitter. It's like, it's now Black TikTok. Like a Black TikTok comment
Black
section.
Black Talk.
Right. Yeah. And everybody in the comment section is just like, yo, she's the glizzy warrior. She knows.
They're cooking her for knowing so
she
much
knows,
about.
So yeah. She's like, she recognized the bun. Yeah. And literally it's like 4,000 comments and being like.
Right. Yo, because it starts to snowball.
They call it the glizzy gladiator. Uh-huh. And it's just constantly this roasting.
Well,
that's
it's funny you said that, because look at one of the hot dogs was the glizzinator.
The glizzinator junior.
Right. Which, by the way, Ross came out to the pop-up. How awesome was that?
Okay, so what was this exactly?
So my buddies one of my good friends was the sous chef at Budokan. He's like a very fancy chef. Mm-hmm. He knows a bunch of stuff. Great guy. Like any true chef, wishes he was a comic. Like, it's always being like, have you heard of this comic? Did you hear this? Mm-hmm. Like, he loves that, you know, the action, you know? Just like a chef wants to create crazy things. He loves the way comedy jokes are structured. He's a very funny guy as well. My other friend, Kyle, who was the creative director over at Roc Nation, the two of them have come together and they're starting to put up pop-ups, potentially open up their own restaurant, right? Right. So me and Chef Merrill have always gone back and forth. He's always sending me like jokes that people are posting, like our friends would be posting and be like, yo, this guy's hilarious. You know this person? Mm-hmm. Yo, I want to go see this person live. And I'm like, yo, she's hilarious. Go see her, right? Every once in a while, I'll send him like, yo, you posted this. Have you ever thought about doing this? Right. And one of the things was, I was at their burger pop-up. They had a burger pop-up not so long ago. Incredible burgers, by the way. Not smash burgers, like thick patties. And he would roll the bun. Have you ever seen this? You roll it in the butter. There's like a butter roller. It's like a warm butter roller. It looks like a little, like a hamster wheel. Mm-hmm. But imagine the outside. Imagine it was going through butter. So the outside of it had like a little bit of butter on it. You roll a burger bun over that. And now you've buttered the whole.
The hamster's there doing the work, right?
Of course, right? That's the burger meat, believe it or not. So imagine that. I said, you know what sucks? It's just butter. They actually bottle their own spicy adobo. They make like organic adobo. So you don't have to get like the chemicals that Goya are putting in there, right? Whatever. They're not going to sue us. This is just for the audio. So I said, why don't you, it's a shame you're not sprinkling some of the some of your spicy adobo onto the burger bun after you've buttered it, so that when you turn it over, you're toasting the adobo, but you're griddling it into the bun. Sure. Via the butter. And he was like, oh my God, that's genius, right? And I was like, what about this? And him and I are always going back and forth on ideas. Anyway, they took a bunch of my ideas and they turned it into one thing. And he knows how much I love just like, you know, I prefer sausage over like bacon and a bacon, egg and cheese. I'd rather have a sausage, egg and cheese. Mm-hmm. So they took a sausage, and this is, I don't even know if you'd enjoy this, but this is the Alexis. It's a pork sausage that is stuffed with corn and cheese. So the sausage has that inside of it.
Lovely.
Besides like pork meat. Topped with brown butter mustard and pickled peppers. And the outside of the bun is, it, have you ever had like a lobster roll?
Mm-hmm.
You know how they butter the outside of the bread? They did that with the butter that I mentioned.
Okay.
So it's a couple of my ideas adobo all brought butter. Into one. Huh?
Adobo butter.
Adobo butter, basically. Mm-hmm. But they're adobo. So they kind of merged a bunch of it. They did not tell me they were going to do this. They just surprised me with my own hot dog. Ross comes to the hot dog event. What does he get? The Glizzenair. He doesn't even get the Alexis.
Wow.
What is the point, man?
Well, his name is on the marquee. You left after the opening act.
I'm the only reason you're here, dog. You came for me. It felt like I got in the way of him having a Glizzenair. He's like, I'm going to go. You can't even talk because your mic is in here. But at the end of the day, I just want to thank those guys. But it was cool. I kept saying things like, look at everyone putting me in their mouth. You know, I kept saying, I would walk around and say stuff like that.
Sure. Your wife loved that.
Yeah, she was like, she was like, again. But let me tell you something. It was literally the best. I don't know if you could call it a hot dog because it's a sausage and not like an emulsified pork thing like a hot dog. It was the best hot dog I've ever had in my entire life. And it's what an honor that it's named after me.
Where do we buy it? Is it available
anywhere?
You
all missed the pop-up, but they're talking about doing another one. And this time I think I'm going to go a little bit further, not just like post about it. I think I'm going to start my own partiful and like invite my friends to come try it.
Okay.
Because a lot of people hit me up and they're like, yo, where can I have one? I'm like, yesterday. Like, you know, right. Like, what are you talking about?
Title of the partiful, put Alexis in your mouth.
Yes.
ASAP.
Alexis in your mouth. And it's delicious. If also, I'm not that flexible. It's the first time I've ever put myself in my mouth. And let me tell you something. I see what all the fuss is about.
Gotcha. Well, congratulations.
I see what all those ladies when I was in high school were excited about. I see what that one priest really wanted to get after.
All right. Lovely.
I see the excitement.
Lovely. Thank you for bringing that up.
No problem.
Okay. Just traumatize our audience. All
right. As if I didn't go through that.
All right, everybody, let's get going. Welcome back to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
What's up? I'm Alexis Guerrero.
We have too much to go over today because the transfer window in most of Europe is closed.
Don't worry about
it. We'll get that later. Anyway, but the transfer window in most of Europe is closed, and it's just been too much drama. You see, if you're watching this, I'm wearing my Everton sweater.
Man.
Because it's really, I mean, out of any team who took the most L's, it was Everton. And we're undefeated this season.
Right.
Yet we're taking L's in some way.
Well, everyone remembers the last few. So
we'll go over the transfer window. We'll go over a couple other stories in football this week.
About some news?
But let's start with the Falaron Balogun.
No. I thought we were going to talk about our...
come on now. Right. Oh, my goodness. How could I forget?
Yo, if you got Cooligan stock in 2015, you up right now. Because look at this,
look
bro.
At this.
To the moon, my G.
We're going to be live on Apple TV, dog.
Bro, and we're going to be simulcasting, bro.
Exactly, an altcast.
A little bit of an altcast. Bro, Campeones Cup, Inter Miami versus Cruz Azul, and Inter Miami versus FC Cincinnati on October 28th. How crazy is that?
So September 16th and October 28th, you're going to have the opportunity to watch one MLS match and one the Campeones Cup. You can watch it with us, and we can actually show the broadcast and react, and everybody can be in the chat. We're going to be pulling up comments. Shout out to Yahoo Sports for making all this happen. It's happening in baseball as well with the guys with
Jake.
Just
the Barbacast, bro.
Jake and Jordan from Barbacast, they're doing a baseball alternative cast or an alt cast.
That's right. They got Tigres versus Guardians and Los Phillies.
But this was the first thing I noticed. A Dominican and a Cuban not doing the baseball coverage.
Yeah. Also, the baseball cover, I love Barbacast, but does their photos look like a before and after?
they do. You know when early days of Instagram, when you would do the filters?
Yeah.
They're like, they're harsh. They sort of work on us. They're a bit harsh on the Barbacast guy. But I love it. But shout
also,
out
to- how are you and I the same skin tone in our photo? We got to go over it. Did they make you lighter or me darker?
Who knows? But we're super excited about this. And obviously this partnership between
Massive
Yahoo,
honor,
Apple
man.
TV and the fact that we get to be a part of it in MLS. A lot of our MLS friends and supporters and fans and everybody
are
really
like,
excited.
How did this happen?
Yeah, that's the first question. Yeah. And then they're like, congratulations.
Yeah, Don Garber's like, I ain't out yet. Who's letting this happen?
Who allowed this?
The wheels are coming off.
Okay. This is a mutiny, clearly.
Damn, I thought they got contracted.
So we're super excited about that. So make sure you join us September 16th. You can join us on the Cooligans YouTube channel and across all Yahoo channels as well and socials and stuff like that. So you won't be able to miss us. So it's going to be really dope.
It's going to be crazy.
Talking about Messi, our version of the Manning cast.
Yeah.
And, with hopefully a little bit more personality than Eli Manning has.
Listen, that man beat the Patriots twice in Super Bowls. I don't want to hear about it. I'm a Giants fan.
With all due respect, Eli, the GOAT. Anyway.
Yeah, our slightly flat-affected king.
Okay, we don't need you to have, personality. We just need you to throw the darts.
This is what would happen if y'all both didn't grow up in Indiana. This is what it would be.
You know what?
Though.
Nobody's perfect. Perfect. All right. Shout out to Gary Indiana, who's still powerless.
Are they?
Terrible. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
It's horrible. Anyway.
Well, good thing we live in the greatest country in the world, huh?
All right. Let's start today with the Phelan Balogun news, because this gentleman, who I was just 2 days ago, I'm like, I'm so thrilled. He's going to be joining Everton Football Club, my Premier League team. I cannot wait for this to happen. And everything seemed to be going in place. And then, boom, he gets his medical, fails the medical. Saw this news. I'm like, excuse me?
Yeah.
My man.
Pochettino didn't tell us nothing about this.
He seemed pretty fine at the World Cup. What happened? And he says he failed his medical and the deal could collapse. So I'm like, oh boy.
But I know Monaco had said he's fine.
Yes.
Yeah, like I don't know what you guys are looking at, but he's fine. And then it completely falls apart. And then I hear that it starts to come back, like close to the closing of the window, it's back on.
So we don't know.
And we had heard that Balogun was in Liverpool at the training center.
Yes. So he flew there to do the medical. Obviously, didn't go well. Then now this is in some disarray. And then this is like within, I don't know, 6 hours. It's like, hey, the deal might collapse. Then we hear deal's back on. They're renegotiating. They're talking to Monaco. They're talking to the player. So that yesterday, last night, that's kind of where I was at. And I'm in my Everton group chat. Like, they know. Everybody there, they're in Liverpool. They have their sources and they're telling me exactly kind of what's going on. Even they didn't know exactly what was going on.
And they're probably asking you like, hey, what kind of player is he? You're American.
Right. Yeah. So I'm looking at my source. I'm Tom Bogert right now.
Yeah.
Trying to find out what's going on. And
damn, it wasn't Chrissy Scoops, bro.
Right? It wasn't until this morning that we saw the comments from the sporting director at Monaco that kind of gave us the entire picture. And I think we might have it. We might be showing it on screen in a second. But effectively, Balogun shut the deal down. Let's kind of go through this because it is a lot, but I'll read it. It says the Premier League has a mechanism where clubs can request additional time to complete paperwork. This was done 5 minutes before the transfer deadline in England for us to complete all the paperwork between Monaco, Everton, and Balogun. I signed the contract. Everton signed the contract. At the last moment, the player decided not to sign. So this is coming from the sporting director, Thiago Scoro, at Monaco. And now continued. Says basically, Balogun's position was, I'm not feeling comfortable with the way the club treated me. I'm not comfortable with the doubts raised about my future or my health. I have no issue, so I'm not comfortable signing a contract here. So now, this is, even as an Everton fan, this gets to a very frustrating place. So like, the player is saying he is perfectly fine. We're never going to know why he failed his medical. What specifically was the issue? That's not going to happen, right? Because if Everton, if they say he failed the medical and then are saying like, no, no, well, but we still want to sign you, but we just have to renegotiate the terms. That is, so now I'm putting that onus on the club and saying like, okay, why are you comfortable signing the player? Why are you comfortable bringing up some sort of medical issue, but still comfortable signing the player? So that this is, I guess maybe they saw something that they were worried about and are like, oh, all right, we're not entirely now. How when a player is signing for a club, they want to know that you want them. They want to know that they're going to get the best opportunity to succeed at their club.
Right, and you're bringing me in as a potential starter, as someone that you are going to trust and have and back in case it doesn't start so smoothly. And also, there may be something that the club put in the contract or was trying to put in the contract that said like, "Hey, we need to see improvement in whatever this injury is, or we need to. Oh, if you're able to start so many games, that's when you're going to get most of your pay. Some type of bonus structure that had something to do with whatever ailment they saw or injury or whatever they saw that kind of gave them maybe some type of safety net where he was like, no, maybe he saw it as like, you're trying to make this impossible for me.
Or you're trying to get a better deal. Maybe you're trying to lower the transfer fee. Yeah. Maybe I can only speculate, but all I can think about Tom Bogert talked about this as well, but the amount of disrespect that the player would feel over like his career being like, you know, being trivialized in a little bit, just of like, oh no, there's some issue, but we'll give you some money. Maybe we'll remove some bonuses or whatever. Like if the player has already agreed to something and now you're trying to change it, especially at the last minute, when you know that the player is feeling a lot of pressure. I'm like, oh my God, and not only is he feeling pressure for his own personal life and his own career, but his club is like, well, you need to sign so that we can sign this other guy that we have waiting down the conveyor belt. Mm. And the Daisy Chelsea also was affected by this because there was another player that they could not sign due to.
Right. Which meant Monaco couldn't get rid of enough non-EU players.
Right, right.
Which meant they couldn't sign
Lira from Mexico.
From Mexico. So suddenly, even now, Mexico is like, yeah, yo, bro. America, get your ish together, bro.
So this is that amount of pressure where, like, you know, Balogun is like that first domino, and then it's like now they're sort of toying with him a little bit and not being super like not negotiating in like very good faith. And again, I'm also speculating. I do not exactly know, but all I can at the very least sort of surmise is like, yo, Balogun is like, yo, what the hell is this, bro? This isn't making me feel good. This isn't making me excited to join the club, kind of being treated this way. And again, it's just, I don't know what the medical issue is. I don't know what the reservations were. I don't think we will ever know. But there's part of, as an Everton fan, I'm like frustrating for the front office to kind of mess this up. But then, as a USMNT fan, I'm trying to be as impartial as possible. I'm like, Balogun, I respect the decision. It's just like, yeah, it's frustrating, but it's like, hey, if you're not going to treat me with respect, then this is my boundary. I'm not going to just like willy-nilly sign for 5 years and then give you my career is now in your hands when this is my first impression of you.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't set the relationship up. It doesn't start the relationship in the right tone when you're saying, like, if you were going on a first date with someone and you guys hit it off on whatever dating app or whatever, and the first time you meet, you're like, you're not as tall as I thought you were. The dating
app is Transfermarkt.
That's the one you're on, bro, and that's it. And
Tindermarkt.
Right. You hit the button that says, like, it's complicated. You're like, oh, boy, now we got to wait. But I think at the end of the day, if you start the relationship off with, like, hey, we're not sure about you, but it feels like maybe Everton, it felt like they were doing too many negotiation tricks. When you're like too close to the end of the window, that's something you do a month in or like a couple weeks in.
Right.
Where you have a couple weeks left, I should say. That's not something you do as the window's closing that gives you like this little, you know, metric that gives you extra time. It's just, it's too close to the window. And look at all the effects from it. And this transfer window was absolutely crazy. In particular, England, even though this transfer didn't go through, which it was listed at £45 million.
For Balogun. Yes.
Yeah, £45 million. So that would have added to the total. But the total that England spent was somewhere over $3 billion just in this transfer window.
just unbelievable. I mean,
I haven't watched The Big Short in a while, but I'm starting my spidey senses is starting to say, like, we may be blowing out our valuations.
Is this sustainable?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I understand that there's a lot of money coming into the Premier League, but wow. I mean, it not only is it an issue when it comes to the when it comes to the two, not even just two, but like all the other clubs, like they're competing with the other club. The other clubs are competing with the Premier League. And this is just another example of like, this seems to be a really tough spot for any, if you're not a Premier League club. I mean, look, we're looking at the top spending clubs here. Manchester City first at 451 million, but they also, the players that transferred out, they also made like 300 or something like that. Chelsea with 349, Tottenham with 314, Newcastle 268. I mean, the only non-Premier League club is Real Madrid there. And even there, pales in comparison to what Manchester City spent.
Bro, Manchester City spending like they ain't got any debt. I have this weird feeling. They got 115 charges.
Is Manchester City, I don't think they are better without Pep Guardiola. I mean, they've looked pretty good so far. Yeah. But I don't know. We'll see how it ends up at the end of the season. But I'd be like genuinely pretty surprised if they like win the league or win Champions League. I just think is given how, you know, is Maresca like, we're not going to say he's as good a coach, but is it?
Well, he comes from the Pep Guardiola, tree. And you would assume he has all of the goods that Pep Guardiola had. But I think at the end of the day, it's not just how good you are at tactics, which clearly Enzo Maresca is. We've seen it. It's also how good are you at getting players to play above their pay grade? How do you get someone inspired on a day where they're tired or, you know, have, you know, some physical issues or, you know, maybe have some family issues at home? Pep Guardiola seemed like he was really good at that. He was like, it was the best ever, maybe a man manager, maybe Sir Alex Ferguson, a lot of people would say, but Pep Guardiola certainly got the best out of his team, especially in the biggest moments. Can Enzo do that? Does he carry the same respect?
Sure.
That, I mean, they kind of look the same. So maybe if you squint, you just think that's Pep.
It's fairly surprising with all the players that left. Like, I mean, this is a very different identity, maybe not identity, but like just a different look for Manchester City. And maybe, you know, you have a coach, even if it's Pep Guardiola, you have a coach for so long, the message starts to get a little bit lost and players are not as...
It's only so long you're going to be able to use the same tactics, the same stories, like anything else. Sometimes you need to change.
Maybe a fresh look, but all the players...
It's either that or you could just completely refresh the team, which is like something like a lot of managers that stuck around for a long time.
Yeah, you know, another transfer was Illiman Ndiaye from Everton to Manchester City, friend of the show.
And wasn't he supposed to go to somebody else? And then he was like, nah.
Tottenham.
And then at last second, apparently everything was signed except him. And last second, he was like, nah, I want to go to City.
What best decision he ever made? I mean, if you have two. Poor if those Tottenham, are the two bro. Suitors, I mean, let's not be crazy.
But then you go back to the Eze deal where they had him sign and he called Mikel Arteta and said, bro, you got to save me.
But this is the thing.
Are you sure there's no way? Because I'm about to go to Tottenham and I don't want to.
The best part of the transfer deadline is that it's like 2 weeks after the season starts. And Jai was like, yeah, I've been seeing what y'all are doing, Tottenham. I don't know if I want to be joining this whole situation.
I think I got enough evidence here to suggest I can't help you. We're looking at some of the values here. Enzo Fernandez at Manchester City was 124 million. Morgan Rodgers was 118 million at Chelsea.
This is pounds, by the way.
Yeah, million pounds.
Yeah.
Elliot Anderson in Manchester City is 115. I mean, Bradley Barcolo, 107 million. Yan Diamond to Real Madrid, 107 million. Sandro Tonali is the first one that goes below 100 million. In fifth. So that's four over $100 million players. That can't be valid. These are all to Premier League clubs, except for Yan Diamond, who's not on this list.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's five, but. Where is this money coming from?
Look, the TV deal is banging, and it is fantastic for the.
But I feel this feels a little bit like when a rapper gets an advance and he doesn't realize it's an advance. You have to make that money back. You know what I mean? Yeah. Your album got to do these numbers or else you owe that money back.
I don't think anyone's worried that the Premier League is not going to do numbers. I don't know, dude. And look, this is...
It's a lot of finance money coming in. If the economy takes a hit.
The Premier League is not Major League Soccer, a single entity where the entire league has to worry about this. This is on the clubs themselves. And I think that, I was seeing there's like a new... financial regulation rules.
What is it? SCR or something like that?
I don't know exactly what it is, but that Premier League is introducing squad cost regulation. Yeah. Where you're getting into GAM and TAM. You're doing it. Y'all are making
money. Well, not exactly, because it's not a value. But the three-letter acronyms
acronyms are coming, and I'm like, hey, I'm familiar with this.
Yeah. No, I know this. I've seen this.
I've seen this before.
Can't wait for you guys to win Campeones Cup.
Okay. So I think the Premier League is aware of just like, because the individual clubs are managing their own finances and you see how much money is going in and out of these clubs, and it could get very reckless very quickly where teams that either want to win or want to try to be sustainable or willing to get some crazy ass sponsor, they're trying to do everything to maintain some sort of balance and ethics and stuff like that. But then the frustrating part is that I see numbers like this, and then I'm like, how the hell did Everton get docked 10 points for like being like $50,000 over on some track? And this is, it's just absurd.
Wait till you watch. They're going to get docked for whatever happened with Balogun. They're going to get docked points because that's Everton's role.
It's just the fact that Balogun again is in the news for just like the wrong reasons. And the first one was not his fault.
Yeah.
But still, it's just so crazy. I don't know if this, I don't think it hurts his stock in any real way, but. The assumption is that he's going to move in January. It's not going to be for 45 million or 50 million. I mean, that's just...
Sometimes there's a January tax, though. Especially if Monaco are like on the brink of a Champions League spot.
As an Everton fan, it's so disappointing because like they sold their backup striker.
Yeah.
Now there's only one striker on the damn team. And now my group chat is like, should we get Martial? He's a free agent. I'm like, what are we doing?
Pogba's a free agent. Martial is a free agent. There's somebody else I was just looking at.
I'm going to show you my group chat what we were talking about. These are their names. Shout out to Adam. He goes, these are the players available that are decent. Jadon Sancho. Leite? I don't know. He's a left back. Bissouma from Spurs. Zinchenko. We need a left back as well. Ito, Alan, Malacia? And Martial and Zay Carlos. Don't know who that is. But bro, this is what we're looking through the bargain bin. We're looking for the scraps.
Take them all at this point. What else are you doing?
Why are we in this position? But yeah, a wild transfer window. Just a lot of money being thrown around. We'll see what these clubs kind of look like in the coming weeks. But man, the Premier League is just on another stratosphere.
Yeah, I mean, I think this just goes to continue the probably the Champions League dominance that Premier League has.
Do they though? I don't want about dominance.
Think about how many of the Premier League clubs end up in the top eight. Think about how many of the Premier League clubs move on. It's just after a while, that gap continues to grow.
The gap is wide, but for a while, it was, I would say when we started this podcast, there wasn't this dominance from Premier League, even though it was still...
The TV money didn't skew it this way. And I mean, you're looking at the top spending clubs. I mean, this is a clear cut sign that yes, the more you spend on transfers don't necessarily net out to winning, but the more you can pay players, that does net out to winning. And no one can pay you as much as a Premier League club. I mean, I think the number was something like the teams that get promoted in the Premier League get more money for getting promoted into the Premier League than like Serie A teams win for winning.
Yeah.
And that at the end of the day, it's just an unsustainable business for everyone else. So I don't know what it's going to take to level this out. Or is it just going to be a continued dominance for the Premier League moving forward? I don't know. But until something major changes.
It's wild that the idea of like, Inter Milan competing with a player and it's like, oh no, he's going to Wrexham.
Yeah. Right? No, Hull has a better shot at signing a player than Inter.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Okay. Well, I mean, money talks. All right.
Major League Soccer has decided to bring their senior teams back into U.S. Open Cup. Now, while we're all excited for that, why do you think they made that decision? We have a couple different theories, but my theory is that U.S. Soccer is maybe starting to flex their muscle a little bit with MLS to suggest, hey, we have a list of rules here. We've let you not follow all of them, right? Some, obviously, for good reason, right? You needed to build the sport. You needed to build the league. Maybe there's more to it. Maybe suddenly U.S. Soccer is saying, hey, follow these rules. And maybe there's a few more down the line.
Yeah, we needed dictator Cindy Parlo Cohn to lay the hammer down.
I got nothing to say about her. At least not with a microphone in front of me.
I mean, look, this is a when MLS first left U.S. Open Cup, just very disappointing. And they were in, like you said, they didn't have all their senior teams. They didn't have every team didn't participate, and this coincided with the beginning of League's Cup. So it was fairly obvious. Lionel Messi joins MLS. MLS is like, all right, we want basically every game that Lionel Messi plays in to be under our control. U.S. Open Cup is not under MLS's control. They don't control the marketing. They don't control the broadcast.
The TV,
right?
Yeah.
The TV, right. They don't control any of that stuff. And they were clearly looking at their most their biggest asset. And they were like, hey, we're not going to just let them play against Vermont Green or some random game, you know, right?
El Farolito, burrito right. shop.
All due respect, I love those teams.
Yeah,
but I think that was the dismissiveness and a little bit of the arrogance,
which
from
does
MLS.
Suck because that's the magic of they call it the magic of the FA Cup.
Right.
Which, by the way, it's only the third it's the third longest competition behind the FA Cup and the Irish Cup. So this is how long something like this has been going on since 1913-1914 season. There has been a U.S. Open Cup for everyone who thinks that soccer just started in America. But MLS decided to take their biggest asset out of it, which I understand the business decision behind it, saying like there's only so many matches that a 30-something-year-old at that time can play. We're not going to let him play, which, by the way, you could have played other members of Inter Miami without Lionel Messi.
Right.
You know, it could have still been a big moment, but whatever. They take some of their major teams out. They're back now. I don't necessarily think – you seem to think that this was a bit of an admittance of – that they made a mistake.
I think there's at the very least the if you go back on a decision that you made, whether it's a mistake or not. I mean, I think the backlash showed. Hey, was it really worth it to I understand because Don Garber was saying this as well about U.S. Open Cup. He kept pointing out the stadiums and the environment. There weren't a lot of fans. Like, we don't want. Why should we be participating in this stuff when there's not necessarily a lot of money to be made around this? But I think it goes to the U.S. Open Cup is part of a bigger picture and a bigger vision. We see it at FA Cup, right? When we speak to a lot of like Premier League legends, right? We had Ashley Cole here. We had Andy Cole. We spoke to Ian Wright. When you talk to them about FA Cup, winning that or playing in that or having some of their biggest memories of being a professional athlete are playing in these cup competitions. Like the FA Cup means a lot to a lot of people and it has a lot of history. Does that mean, and that goes in Europe and especially England, it's hard. Tradition is difficult to break. I understand that. But The U.S. Open Cup could be something that if we all just put our heads together and just really worked, that not only just from a sporting standpoint of like what players play and what teams participate, but like it being marketed properly, the stories being told about why it's a significant competition. El Farolito, this
the
burrito shop
in San Francisco,
the DC one, the one in
Cristo's,
DC.
The
liquor store.
Yeah.
I mean, these are fantastic stories.
Even Cal FC, that so many years ago when Eric Winalda just became, they were playing in the Chicago Fire top and like FC Dallas shorts. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of the fun of it. And to some degree, the fun of it is Lionel Messi having to play a taco shop. You know what I mean? Like,
there would
that's
be,
the excitement behind it.
The articles written about, oh my God, the greatest player on earth is playing against, you know, baristas. Like, yeah. Whatever.
My God.
That's funny. That's fun.
That's headline material.
I'm on board, right? So we're looking at Tom Boger tweeting and says, sources confirmed. Shout out Joe Lowry and Ben Wright.
Ben Wright got the scoop.
From Backheel. We're the first to mention this. So shout out to them. But this is the details. They now every MLS club will MLS club in the United States, because obviously the Canadian clubs play in their own Canadian competition. They enter in the round of 64. That round starts in July. Final is in December. The prize money is doubled. So
it's $1 million now.
Is it a million? Well, it was a million. I think would it now be 2 million if it is currently doubled?
I think it has been doubled to a million.
Okay, I don't know.
But the point is, and also they say they go so far as to say, yeah, okay, so it's $1 million.
Yeah.
But they by the way, someone said that in earlier. We just didn't have a premonition. The most important thing for MLS is that they've changed the format around, or the scheduling of it around, so that it doesn't affect League's Cup. Mm-hmm. I wonder what, like, the new schedule has something to do with it.
Yeah.
$1 million is not nothing to slouch at if you're an MLS club, right? Mm-hmm. If you're one of the smaller clubs, that's a big, significant income that you can spend on, whether it's your academy or on signing a player. And you could get, you can get a much better player with an additional million. Like, that's nothing to laugh at. Or maybe that goes right to the players. That's a bonus for the players. And who wouldn't want to play for an extra $100,000.
And you get a CONCACAF Champions Cup spot.
So. Exactly, which is a huge opportunity. In, yeah. So I think this is there's a big opportunity for the clubs to be back in it. I also think it just feels good. It feels holistically good to have every level of American soccer involved in it, as opposed to one continuously finding a way to separate themselves. But I think the real conversation here is, does this lead to more changes, right? Are we starting to see U.S. soccer kind of, well, I don't know why I said
U.S. soccer.
Soccer. Boston or Minnesota? Where was that from? Are we starting to see U.S. soccer kind of flex their muscles a little bit in the how the game is sort of controlled? So U.S. soccer and MLS and U.S. soccer kind of, they don't have as much overlap. The executives are sort of split, right?
Right, especially with the split from Soccer United Marketing.
Right. So Soccer United Marketing is no longer we've met people that work there and we're like, everyone thinks it's like this evil organization. We're a marketing, company. But there was a lot of people in the room that maybe shouldn't be shaking hands.
Sure.
They should be adverse, mm-hmm. against each other. So this kind of gives me like U.S. soccer saying like, we're going to take over youth soccer a little bit. We're starting to see U.S. soccer kind of implement changes that want to make the game grand. And maybe I'm reading a little bit too into it, but U.S. soccer put out their own article explaining the new format of this tournament. And in it, there's a quote. I don't know if we can pull it up. But in it, there's a quote, which I'm like, man, as I'm, again, an American soccer fan reading into this, I'm thinking, the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup is one of the most powerful platforms we have to showcase what makes American soccer special. This is Dan Helfrich, by the way, the U.S. Soccer Chief Operating Officer. But listen to this. He said, when you bring various levels of the soccer community together, you create a connected competitive environment that moves the sport forward and gives fans the drama of knockout soccer. Along with the MLS, USL, and all the member organizations represented in the Open Division, the U.S. Open Cup reflects our shared commitment to strengthen the future of the game in this country. Which feels like almost like this is part two of what we told you we were doing with bringing in U.S. Open Soccer, which they very clearly were like, this is to change the future of the sport in this country.
Well, this also does feel a little bit to what we were talking about on Monday, like it's obviously on a much grander scale, but the divisions and the little bit of the friction between FIFA and UEFA. Right. There's a like not seeing eye to eye on how we should sort of do things like MLS. And U.S. soccer. U.S. soccer is the governing body for this, for the United States, and should say, like, and the rules are quite clear, and it's very much in writing as far as playing in Open Cup. The rule specifically is it's U.S. soccer's professional league standards, which say, quote, U.S.-based teams must participate in all representative U.S. soccer and CONCACAF competitions for which they are eligible. MLS was like, no, we're trying to do something else out here.
Right, that's exactly the point I'm making, right? Like, you can't be adjacent to the sport in this country.
Right.
And all of the quotes that are coming out from U.S. soccer people are saying, like, all of these changes we're making are to advance the sport in this country, make the sport better, make our development of players better, make the sport bigger in this country. They all seem to be pushing maybe I'm not saying strong arming, but if that's true, if this is a UEFA FIFA thing, this feels more like a Premier League versus UEFA thing, right? Right. If Premier League is saying, well, this is the way we want to do it, and UEFA's like, no, we got rules in this right, confederation.
Because at the very least, like the leagues themselves have a very, very strong profit motive, right? They want to make as much money as they can. But there has to be somebody that just says, hey, like, this is just like regulators for the stock market. And just somebody being like, yo, chill. Yeah, it's cool that you want to make a whole bunch of money and do all this stuff. But that really goes against the heart, the vision that we're trying to, we don't create this landscape and environment just so that you can succeed as an individual league or club or whatever. It's so everybody eats, right?
Right, and that's I think a big part
and
of
even
it.
Future generations, right? You're also thinking about that
and
as well.
That to me is the big part of it, right? Because we're going to talk about future. I don't think this is a two-part act by U.S. Soccer.
Well,
my theory, right? My hot take, if you will, is that there's more down the line. Right, with MLS already switching to a fall, spring, whatever you want to call it, the universal, the global calendar, right? They're switching to a global calendar. There's talks of them having votes of getting rid of cap, the crazy cap structures and coming up with something a bit more simplified, maybe something that aligns a bit more with a global market. Is there more? And of course, I'm talking about promotion and relegation.
I mean, that's always the next conversation. Well, USL.
Is there a chance that U.S. Soccer can push this next commissioner closer and closer to aligning with the way the game is supposed to be, right? FIFA has set out rules, and think of FIFA whatever you want, but the rules that we all sort of live by are there's 20 teams in your top flight, there's promotion and relegation. I know some leagues have, I think Germany has 24 in their top flight. 18. Who is it, Mexico? Who has, somebody has 24? I forget who it is, but there's rules, right, that you could adjust rule. But the main stay is it should be pretty close to 20, if not 20, right. And there should be a chance for teams to go up and down. Is there a chance that U.S. Soccer will continue to push the sort of footballing structure, the soccer structure in this country, closer and closer to aligning with the way the game is supposed to be?
Right, and that's my hope. Shout out. We're looking at Henry Bushel on Twitter. It says U.S. Soccer is restructuring its sporting department. It's going to have no classics sporting director. Pochettino and Hayes report straight to the CEO. Who's the CEO? What am I forgetting his name? JT Batson, I believe.
Yeah.
New directors of soccer, one on men's boys side and one on women's girls side, will oversee the pathway to the USMNT and women's national team. Well, this is long overdue. And again, this just tells—
Not having a sporting director is kind of odd, right? Because maybe that position was sort of in title only.
It might be just another layer. I mean, I'm not going to say you don't need it, but like the coach, their coaching staff and CEO, I think kind of can combine those roles, right?
Yeah, I guess having a title of CEO kind of makes you're the chief executive officer. You're the
So
you oversee everything, but it's nice to have someone that can come in and sort of be the ombudsman between you and the coaching staff.
Does this mean Guchonier was no longer there? Is he gone?
No, he was the director of sporting. That's not the sporting director. That's a different.
Wow. Okay.
He's clearly.
No, you can't fire me. That's not even my role.
Bro, you got it all messed up.
You're saying the
word. You know, why don't you take a breather, get it right, and then we can have this conversation again.
By the way, I quit.
I think Guchen Yebo has a future there, if I'm not mistaken, right? Because I haven't heard of him leaving, but it just seems like the titles are sort of being shifted around. But this feels to me like the tides are turning. I think it's a positive to have the U.S. soccer, not in the organization, soccer in America, line up with the way the sport is sort of supposed to be across the
pushback from me.
Although
now
I'm wondering, you can't force promotion and relegation, but can you get it closer, especially in the women's game? I think would be a big, huge positive. I don't know. Part of me is starting to believe like what we had hoped for. We had so many frustrations when we started this podcast 10, 11 years ago that there was like too many MLS was too much in the room of US soccer and that they could sort of do whatever they wanted. Now, they did it within reason, yeah. But it seemed like more and more they were pushing away from that. Now it seems like they're coming closer to the global market. I think this is only going to help soccer in America. I think it's only going to help it grow. I think it's going to help it in secondary cities. I think it's going to help it in smaller markets. I think it's going to be like a nice sort of, what I'm hoping for in the next 4 years is we see more and more from US soccer. It seems to be going in the right direction, in the direction that the fans want it to go to.
Well, the changes seem to be very, just like for us, like diehard American soccer fans, just the changes seem to be so like incremental, and we just like want to kind of rip the Band-Aid off. And to MLS and Garber's credit, because he said this as well, like, the league is much more sustainable than it was even when we started this show.
Very much so.
I mean, there is something to be said about like the financial aspect and the foundation of the league to be safe, to be just grounded and safe financially. And then now, but if you're being for real about wanting to compete, look at, we were just talking about these Premier League transfers and stuff like that. If you want to get to a place where you can do that, I don't see how you can do that with a single entity and without promotion relegation. I just do not see it. It's just the amount of passion and risk and that Pro Rel brings. It brings risk to the owners. It brings risk to the fan base. But it brings a psychotic level of devotion because you don't want your team to get relegated. And yes, there will be losers.
And every game is important. And we've had MLS clubs and players say, like, the beginning of the season, you can kind of take it easy. Mm-hmm. That does not exist anywhere else.
Right. It's like I feel like the underpinnings of like what American soccer sort of is by a lot of kind of good people and bad people that helped shape to what it is now.
Takes,
I mean, the Chuck Blazers that obviously didn't have the best interest of American soccer in his mind because he was taking bribes and money. And
even if he did, it wasn't the top priority. His pocket
clearly
was
not. Yeah. So I hate to speak ill of the dead, but yeah. I mean, my man had an apartment for his cats at the Trump Tower. So it is what it is. But this is, look, in general, it just feels like, the priority was to prioritize the capital that built the league and the clubs versus the vision of the game and getting it connected to a fan base and creating a culture around it.
And here's JT Batson. He says, we want U.S. teams that consistently compete to win World Cups and major tournaments. That starts long before a player puts on a U.S. men's national team jersey or U.S. jersey. It starts with developing more world-class American players and building the best player development system in the world. And I have a feeling that this is actually a massive positive for MLS, that the powers that be are saying, you need to be in line with us in order for us to be great. Yeah. We need you.
So
what this also tells me, and I think this is the exciting part, is that if a commissioner works for the owners, right? And that's, everyone's like, the commissioner's for the league. No, the commissioner works for the owners.
Right.
And the owners are mostly NFL guys that don't know, don't care, and don't want to hear about the way soccer is structured elsewhere because we know how the NFL works and it makes a ton of money. If someone is going to say the sport needs to, get closer to what this is versus what you have over there with NFL. If anyone's going to do it, it's starting to seem to me like US soccer are the people that are saying, fine, we'll do it. We'll be the adults in the room. And if that's the case, then this is a huge positive for all the negatives we have and all the worry we have about US soccer. It's starting to be a massive positive for soccer in America.
It is a positive, but even you saying that, I'm like, they couldn't do that before. What the hell? What were they doing before?
but think about all the steps it took to get here. You had to separate yourself from Soccer United Marketing. You had to become a little bit more autonomous. And now that they are fully autonomous, they're saying, hey, things around here got to get cleaned up.
Well, see, I one thing before we wrap up, the comments from our last video about the U.S. youth soccer were fascinating. And we should probably go through them and react to them real soon. But there's a lot of people who have either kids playing in youth soccer or they
were. We asked them to comment. So I'm right. Thank you for everyone who did.
Or coaches who've been coaching for you. And there was one comment, and I don't remember who it was by. Apologies. We'll reference it later. But saying like that I was a coach 30 years ago and I went to England or Italy or whatever. Like we worked with the people that do the stuff in Europe to apply that here. But it all went out the window to prioritize like making money. So that's kind of my hope, is that the people that are in place at US Soccer care. Like, and it's you care about growing the sport and accept that growing the sport is probably not going to be aligned with making the most money. That somebody has to make that sacrifice.
I actually think that's false. I think they're making money, right? We know how to make more money than anyone else in the world. So if you bring our structure, if you bring our making money know-how, and with that structure, we'll find a way to do it. And I think part of that is something like a solidarity payment, which MLS wants no part of, right? And Yedlin's whole issue.
I don't think it's the same case as before.
Not before, but they don't want to pay solidarity payments. But that's how these smaller academies can make the money, right? If we start to get players that are considered world class and can get sold for lots of money, suddenly every academy is going to be like, how do we find more of these kids? And they're going to go into the markets that don't want. So there's domino effects, and I have a feeling this is the second domino to fall in a long list of things. In the end, do you think this means MLS becomes part of the global market and gets promotion and relegation? Do you think this is the start of that?
Those are two separate things. I do think they are become more a part of the global market. I think they're much closer to that, and changing in the schedule suggests that more. I mean, we're going to see in next year, this transfer window closes, and we're going to see what that looks like, right? It might be a much better situation where bigger name players or younger players are joining a league, right? Like literally at this date next year.
Yeah.
So that's the one place they need to compete to bring the talent in, and they are shaping the calendar and to be able to compete, and that's the one. That's the first step. That's one of the many steps to get to a place that you're kind of describing. But yeah, my main concern is like, the people that are there, you know, we sometimes talk about how in Europe they're like mired in tradition and they're rigid and they don't want to change things. And sometimes that's good for the health of the sport and the sustainability of the sport, because they say, this is what we know. This is what we love. We don't want to change it. And there are moments when that is bad, but again, you can't argue with the foundation that they set up. And there's always going to be people in it that are going to be like, oh, I can make a whole bunch of money, but whatever.
But I also don't think that needs to go away from the game in America. If you are hellbent on making the most profit that you possibly can, whether it's for yourself or your shareholders, continue to do that if that means the club that you are running is succeeding. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you're like the Cincinnati Bengals, right, and you're like, hey, I'm making $1 billion without even making the playoffs, that's probably not good. And that's not good for being a fan of that team. So right. If we're going to take something good from Europe, feel free to bring in the making money. If that means the players still become great and still get to go, the fans get to witness a good product on the field. And if you're the Montreals of the world, the Club de Foot Montreal, and you was like, yo, I don't want to play in this water, I want to go to a smaller league, you have the chance to do that now.
Yeah. Well, this is hopefully a step in the right direction, but obviously still a lot more to do. It's an exciting change. It needed to be corrected, and hopefully it is a sign that, again, and seeing the tweet from JT Batson of just like, yeah, these are things.
All the messaging is lining up. I see patterns. You know what I mean?
Let's get JT on the show. Bro, ask him directly.
Let's go. Champions League draw is set for the 2026-2027 Champions League season. And while we can look at all the different websites and articles and different tweets that tell you who has the hardest and who has the easiest draw, why don't we talk about what we're most excited about? Because I have this one thing that is going to absolutely be the number one thing you're going to look for in this Champions League season.
For me, I'm going to start with, I'm excited to see Como play in Champions League.
The way Cesc Fabregas has them playing, it is exciting.
They got into...
Should we go and stay in one of those waterside villas, those lakeside villas, dude?
You want to recreate my honeymoon?
Bro, they bring you via a boat, via like a lake boat to the game.
Okay, that's an option. That'd be an interesting.
Why wouldn't we?
So yeah, I mean, as far I mean, we're looking at the stadium at Como. Is beautiful. If you have not been to Como, I suggest you get married and go have a honeymoon there. That's what I did.
Also, stop calling it Lake Cuomo. That is a much worse lake.
Okay.
That. Why is the water tickling me? Okay. It's Italian.
Why is the city groping me?
It's the culture.
Okay. But no, Como is absolutely beautiful.
Como's incredible. It's just north of Milan. So all the big money people from Milan. This is their Hamptons, if you will.
Sure, sure.
This is where they go. By the way, people in Como are like, do not compare us to the Hamptons, but it is. It's where the rich people from that place go.
But it's cool to see. I mean, they qualify for Champions League on the final day of the season. They're basically they basically took AC Milan spot. But here is their league phase. This is who we're going to be matching up. This is pretty brutal. They're going to play against PSG, Manchester United, RB Leipzig, Ike, right?
Ike Athens, yeah. RC Lons, Feyenoord, Betis, sorry, yeah. and Barcelona. Away. But yo, PSG players in Como, that is going to be a party, dude.
So this is going to be, at the very least, it'll be entertaining. This is the, I'm excited about, you know, obviously the influx of money for a team. Like, this is what, Serie A, I saw Gattuso talking about this. So just like, they're like, there's no money. We can't get anybody. Yeah. They can't convince any players to really, the players that they want, the coaches can't really convince. This is why they're so, you know, we talk about what's happening in Italy where the young players are not playing and there's all these other issues and stuff like that. It's a huge problem.
They got no funds,
there's no money, When you're broke, this is you're going to have to cut corners. Like, honey, there's no, I'm sorry, we're no Twix this weekend. Yeah. No Kit Kats.
But that's the problem for AC Milan not making it. It's that was worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Because they need just the money you get for just taking part in these matches, never mind winning it. I think Como's like an awesome thing to look for. I'm going to be excited to see. I love Cesc Fabregas' tactics. I think he's one of the most exciting managers that we have in the game right now.
Cesc was at, if I'm not mistaken, he was, when I played in TST, I think Como had a team there that he was coaching, right?
I
don't remember if it was the same year I was there or the year before. I literally, like, my memories are like, I don't know if I saw him on TV or I saw him in person. I do not remember.
Yeah, but you're getting old. You're getting old.
But I do, I just have a memory of him standing watching the game while I'm watching him. I don't know, whatever.
You were like, wait a minute, did I run a crime family in New Jersey out of a strip club and a pork store?
I'm pretty sure.
I think I did, bro. The early 2000s were crazy. Man, good thing you lost weight and grew your hair back there. Polancafini.
Yeah.
For me, that's how much you love Como. You've become fully Italian. As much as I'm excited to see Como, because I think their manager has great tactics and is advancing the game, I want someone who's going to drag the game down to them.
Hell yeah.
And that is Jose Mourinho is back. Real Madrid in Champions League, which I guess recency bias, I forgot that he never won Champions League with Real Madrid.
That's right.
So this is a chance for him to finally win it with Champions League. And look, dude, they look really good at the beginning of the season.
Yeah,
they've won 4-1 and 4-0 in their last two matches. And this is their draw. Mm. They're going to go to Inter, PSV, Leipzig, and LASK. More like LASK place. Am I right, everyone? And then they go away to Arsenal, Roma, Shakhtar, and AEK. It's a relatively easy draw for them outside of Inter. Maybe Leipzig could give them a play. And obviously Arsenal, who beat them last year.
lost in the final.
Yeah, doesn't matter. We got there and they didn't. But the point is, but damn it, man, penalties. What? Don't remind me. But long story short, did they beat them 2 years ago? Jesus, whatever. Maybe the same thing's happening to me.
Right.
You and I have the same disease. But long story short, I think this is going to be a huge, huge deal to have Jose Mourinho. And it's not just the tactics or whatever. It's the drama that he brings. It's what happens before and after the 90 minutes. What's he going to say in the press conference? What happens if Real Madrid loses badly to LASK? You know, remember when they lost to Sheriff? Like, anything can happen. With Jose Mourinho at the helm, This could be like Hollywood level drama.
Well, I think the best thing that that Mourinho is doing right now is what he did. Was it after the first or the second game? The one where I think he was subbing out Vinicius Jr. and the crowd was cheering for him. And he hugged Vinny and said, like, look, and he pointed to the crowd, like, they all love you. They all love you. And yeah. just said, again, and that the job of, we all know the job of the manager at Real Madrid is really just to manage the egos, make sure everybody's happy to show up to work, because you know inevitably there's going to be some kind of drama.
Always is.
So, yeah, it's nice to see. There's also we haven't seen a Mourinho since... Not even at United. There still was like a lot of drama at United, but working for a club that you know, money is not really an issue. There's no he can fill his pot with all the ingredients that he wants. Like, he's like a little. I mean, we're looking at the worst photo. He looks very unhappy, but he's kind of like has a new sort of cheerful attitude that we haven't seen in quite a while, because he hasn't had the level of resources that a club like Real Madrid
I'm also excited to see disposal. I'm excited to see him on the sidelines at the Emirates versus Arsenal, because Mikel Arteta doesn't have the same temperament that Arsene Wenger had. Feeling that if he gets a little, you know what I mean, if he wants to make it sticky, Arteta's like, oh buddy, we could go. This is my house.
right.
North London forever gonna be sung loud as hell that night.
So at the very least, yeah, we have a good amount of storylines that Mourinho is going to bring in just the Champions League season, not even in La Liga. So yeah, a lot to look forward to, and also. Have a lot to look forward to with the Cooligans as well, because we're going to be we can sort of announce it.
Let's just make it more mysterious.
We're going to be doing stuff for Champions.
Man, so. You know what? You may be hearing us a lot more on those days.
On Champions League. So stay locked in, especially on Champions League weekdays. But yeah, this is just another opportunity. As far as like who wins the whole thing, one thing I think, you know, Arsenal has had a fairly horrendous transfer window and not really brought in a lot of the...
Well, we only have one left winger, so it's not great.
Not the reinforcements that you kind of need. I mean, and it's for a club like Arsenal that got to the Champions League final, and it, you know, that is where, you know, they had enough to win the league, but Champions League is just another tournament where it's just... It just requires so much of the players. Again, so you need a lot of depth.
We took the winners to penalties. So, yes.
But
I will say,
when it comes to Saka scoring that goal against Villa, I did feel that there's some like level of the confidence seems to
be. Yeah, man.
Well, we're not used to this. This is not a thing.
He got the cornrows now. He got the braids in, bro.
He was screaming at the away fans at Villa.
No, he was screaming at the Arsenal fans.
The Arsenal fans, the away fan at Villa, being like, this is our club. Tell them we're champion. And he's pointing at them, pointing at the other fans. Let them know.
Say it with your chest, bro. A little louder from the back of the room.
So this is a kind of, we're not, you know, Arsenal have not won in a long time. But to see their star player embody. Act like this, be like, yo.
I mean, he's embodying what it means to be
didn't
someone.
Didn't he get married as well? Didn't he get married over the summer?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. He's engaged or something.
I didn't get an invite, which is weird.
He got engaged. Okay, all right.
He still has a chance to invite me.
Okay, but him and his lady, they're beautiful, beautiful couple.
Yeah.
He's just like, nah, bro. This is who I'm. I'm growing up right now. I'm letting everybody
star
know.
Star boy, more like star man, bro.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But what I like about the attitude that Arsenal seems to have is it's sort of that we deserved to win the Premier League last year. Remember, they finished second 2 years in a row?
Three
years in a row. So they're like, we deserve to win. It was like, we won it.
Yeah.
There's no more questions as to who we are or what we're made of. We won it. And I think you're seeing that from Bukayo Saka, and I think proving it in Champions League. So if you want to ask the question, who wins the whole thing? I think this is Arsenal's Champions League to win. I do think the same, Manchester City, although they have a pretty hard draw, Real Madrid, PSG, you're still going to have your cast of clubs that can surprise anyone, that can, you know, in a knockout round, can find a way to beat the opposing team and, you know, surprise anyone. But I still feel like Arsenal are right now probably slated as the favorites. Doesn't mean that I'll believe that as we get closer. Right. But to me, there's really no reason outside of the depth at left wing with just Zolis after getting rid of Gabriel Martinelli, which I had asked for, but I was hoping we'd bring somebody else in. But we also have a bunch of players that are a little bit more...
I still think.
I mean, but hold on, real quick. Look at this, right? If you need 15 or 16 points, is generally the understanding of what it takes to get into the top eight. Mm-hmm. That means you need 4 wins. From here, do you not see 4 wins for Arsenal?
Of course. I mean, they didn't lose a game in the league phase last year.
Right. But I see.
They lost one, I think, the year before that or something.
Saba and Slavia Prague, come on now. Lille, we have to be able to win at Lille, right? Real Betis, sure. I could see you saying, hey, Napoli, Bayern, Real Madrid being your toughest competition. If we win those other ones, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, is that 20 points? No, that's 15 points. So we need a draw. And that's good said. Imagine we beat Dortmund, which again, Arsenal should, especially with they're buying one area, a player we didn't want. You know what I mean?
Right, think
about that. So between Real Madrid, Bayern, and Napoli, can Arsenal not go out and secure a draw? And honestly, I think Napoli's beatable as well.
I don't think Arsenal have pretty much anything to worry about. I don't think there's any team on here that, not to say that they're not going to get
Bayern,
like,
away is
going to
be difficult.
It is going to be challenging, but with the way they play, and we saw it last year, and we would imagine something fairly similar this year. Not a lot of goals, set piece, blah, blah, blah. But defensively, they're still fantastic. So the only real concern here is that Saliba's hurt and he's not going to be back for a while. So that's I think two things. Saliba being hurt is...
Konsa though?
But he's not Saliba, right?
Right.
But Saliba being hurt, and then also, I still think PSG might still be the favorites. A little less now because Bradley Barcola is now went to Liverpool.
He wasn't starting as much, though.
Still incredibly effective on the bench. But the issue with the PSG, the luxury that they have is that they don't play a lot of their players much
in their domestic
league. So they clearly they prioritize Champions League, and they have the luxury to do that because they lock up Ligue 1 pretty early. And unless there's not a bigger challenger in Ligue 1, I think PSG might be favorites again and three-peat, and it would be kind of crazy, but they have a plan and vision. And you know, in the past, with maybe Kylian Mbappe was the one who always got in the way, I don't know, but the team is just fantastic right now.
And this is why I thought it was important, or it would have been important, for Arsenal to go after someone like a Kvaratskhelia, mm-hmm. which you would have had to pay a lot of money for. But really, the only way to level the playing field against PSG is either become much deeper than they are or start to take away some of their best players.
Yeah.
That's it. Honestly, you're going to have to make them weaker by subtraction, because that's the only way you're going to compete with a team that necessarily can sleepwalk through their domestic league, where Arsenal has to play, Arsenal, City, all the other Premier League teams have to play tough competition week in and week out, because we've already said the Hulls of the world can compete with the champions of other leagues based on money and how many players they can buy. So it's week after week, Arsenal are facing a tough club. So I think I still view Arsenal as the favorites. I could see what PSG would be your favorite. They're a title holder, and maybe there's no signs that they'll let go of it. But for me, I think Arsenal have a little bit of an easier schedule and an easier way in.
Let us know who you think is winning the whole damn
Put it
thing.
In the comments, bro.
All right, let's wrap up there, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of The Cooligans. We always appreciate it. Just a reminder, September 16th, the live all-cast. We will be doing a little Manningcast style, Cooligans cast, for the Campeones Cup Inter Miami against Cruz Azul. It'll be on our YouTube channel across all of Yahoo. This is you can watch the actual game with us. You don't even have to switch on to Apple TV, but you're welcome to do that as well if you hate us and you do not love us. So make sure you do that. September 16th, the game, I believe, kicks off at like 8:30, but I think we're on at around 8 p.m.
Yeah, we'll be on Eastern. A few minutes beforehand, but it'll be exciting, and we're going to try to make it as funny as possible.
Yeah,
so
we're going
to
be
out with us.
We're also going to be at Yahoo's studios as well doing that, so it'll be super professional, super cool. It's a very huge milestone.
This is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. Apple TV has never done anything like this, and we happen to be the first.
They keep reminding us of it.
they've never done anything like this. And then we used to, when we first went to MLS Cup in 2016 in Toronto, we had to sneak in to parties, like the MLS parties and all the
100%.
Events. Literally.
And then when people say, who are you? We would hand them a sticker that was our business card, just to give you an idea of how far we've come.
So it is quite remarkable from remembering those days to where we are now. So everybody, we'd love for you to join us. Join us in the chat. It'll be a really, really awesome experience. And then a little bit of a celebration of where we currently are. So everybody, y'all the absolute best. Thank you so much for hanging out. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you like on the YouTube.
If you are still a member of the Patreon, you got to get your ass over to YouTube members only.
Correct. YouTube.com. /membership. There's a join area. Button right there. It's impossible to miss. If you're watching this video, it's like, right? I don't know. This is not video.
This
but
is never going to. Yeah. This anyway. Isn't going to air anywhere.
But you know what I get. Okay. So make sure you do that. Cancel your Patreon membership and join on YouTube. It is cheaper and you get access to the same stuff. So make sure you do that. All right. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with us. We appreciate it. It is now another reminder. We're back. We're on Mondays and Wednesdays instead of Mondays and Thursdays. So adjust your schedules accordingly. Enjoy your weekend. Hope all your teams lose. And we'll be back on Monday with a brand new episode. Cheers, everybody.
Love you guys.